Put that there. Completely dark out. And someone just put that there. Looking at the stars. You've probably not ever done this, but have you ever gone out walking in your yard, if you have a yard? You could do this in your apartment, if you live in an apartment. You turn off the lights, pull the shades. Not if you're in the yard, of course. In the apartment. This is a story for two different types of people. I may reference one or the other indiscriminately, and I may occasionally forget to remind you which one I'm talking of. So you're in the apartment. Turn the lights off, pull the shades. You're in the yard. The light is off, no shades. And let's say before the absolute darkness, perhaps if you could turn the sun on and the other one just leaves the light, you look around. You look around, you get a sense of what's before you. And perhaps you try to remember what it is, because in a moment you're going to be challenged. You're going to turn the light off and try to negotiate your way around your apartment or your yard. I simply just exhausted myself. It's the end of the story, the end of the challenge. Fire the cannon. It's done. Really, all I wanted to say is that I do occasionally walk about my yard at night in the dark, and I stumble over mysterious objects that I don't know what they are. I just stumbled over something. I don't know what it was. It was an object. It had metal cage, plastic. It's like a box to keep a wolf in. And I don't recall any wolf boxes. And then the great trouble, of course, the next day, I remember that wolf box I crashed into. And I'll go out and look. There won't be anything there. What happens, I suppose, is that when the sun falls, some group of children, hooligans, gather up their objects and lay them all around my yard, and then laugh in the bushes as I trip over them. Unlikely, you say, but try it yourself, in your apartment, lights off, shades drawn, in your yard, sun off, shades drawn. Very, very sparkly fellow up there in the sky. Just blinking away like a maniac. Last night I did some stargazing. Some interesting things last night. Around 9:08, space station. Burning across the sky, directly overhead. What should it look like? Much brighter than a satellite. Much brighter than a star, I think. I think it might be the third brightest thing in the sky. Sun, moon, then the space station. There's no other thing brighter. Coursed overhead, however high it is, 150 miles, I don't know, six or seven people on board, floating. I always picture the space station people on treadmills, or watching their pens spin in the air, or just looking out the window. They don't really work, do they? There's no science on board. Or if there is, it's robotic science. They're just there to, what? Float and have some fun. Press the on button. Press the off button. Look inside the box and see if the snails are still alive. It's not hard. You can't fool me. Can't fool an old wolf box kicker. So they went overhead, 6 or 7. I had the sort of emotional response. I wanted to wave to them. I knew it was foolish. But it occurred to me that I only wanted to wave if they would consider waving back. That went on in my head. I'll wave if they wave, but I'm not going to wave if they won't. Get off their treadmills. I also picture them eating cereal. Where did that come from? Are there a lot of images, videos of astronauts eating cereal on the space station? I don't know where that comes from. And it's porridge, not... And they're eating very old bowls, wooden spoons. This might be a dream that I have. In their little white T-shirt costumes. They all wear white T-shirts and boxer briefs, even the women. That's what I think. So the space station went over 9:08. When was it? 30 minutes earlier. 30 minutes earlier. It's an iridium flare. An iridium flare, can you believe it? Sounds impossible. You're probably thinking I'm making it up. Look it up. Iridium flare. Now what that is exactly. Oh, what a labour to explain. I'll do my best. We'll start on the top of Mount Everest. Let's go there. We could be in Antarctica. It doesn't matter. We could be in your room or on the yard. Lights off. Shades drawn. Let's say you're on Everest, though. Just because no one is and there won't be any confusion. You're on top of Everest. You need to make a phone call. You need to say, I'm on top of Everest. It's lovely up here. The people in the space station just went by and they waved. They could see me. Now, you can't do that with your regular cell phone. You cannot. You can with an iridium phone. Iridium. Now, the iridium phones, and you could still get iridium phones. They work anywhere in the world. They're a precursor to the cell phone. The company, Iridium, so it almost sounds like an anarchic science fiction mining company on a distant planet. But Iridium was the name of this company. They launched hundreds of satellites into space shortly before the cell phone revolution. Now, these satellites have these three panels, they're Iridium panels. And they're highly, highly reflective. It allows for whatever it is to go up into space and bounce back down to your phone on Everest. You know, these Iridium satellites are still in space and people still use them. The company went bankrupt. They spent billions on these satellites. The company went bankrupt. The US government bought it. Bought all the debt and then did something with it, tossed it around in a bag, and then some private company owns it now with US government oversight, meaning they can take it over any time they like. And if you're making that phone call for Mount Everest, you may suddenly find yourself out of luck. Now, these Iridium satellites with their highly reflective panels will go spinning around, but there are times when they go overhead that they spin and turn just in the right way, that their panels, one of their iridium panels, will reflect the sun directly down into a particular and fairly small location, and it will create a very bright, comet-like flare. It's not comet-like because there's no trail, but it's It's a bright little burst, like almost like a moving explosion, but it's controlled enough. And then it's gone. It lasts 15 seconds. But you have to know where to look. So last night, I don't know what time it was, 8:29, 8:43, sometime. It was an iridium flare. I do sound like I know just about all there is to know about iridium flares and telephones, and you might think, well, I'd like to consult with him about other important matters. But the truth is, all my knowledge is stolen from another fellow who told me this last night, shortly before the iridium flare appeared. Now, the only good job I did, really, was spilling it all back in a fairly coherent fashion. I don't know if I did. It felt coherent. I was surprised myself as I did it. I didn't know I knew this. I thought to myself, this iridium tale is going nowhere, so I don't know anything about it. But apparently I remembered well enough. The little fellow on Mount Everest helped me, I have to say. Sort of a mnemonic trick. Held the whole thing together. Fellow on Everest, the iridium satellite's going overhead. Yes. I saw some galaxies. Me and this fellow. Astronomer. He's the fellow you want, by the way. If you need an important, immediate consultation about this or that. Astronomers are lovely people. Odd. Strange as can be, but anyone that's that interested in something, they'll never touch, and it's so very far away. I left my own devices looking up at the heavens. I can offer very little. Do you know that the last star in the hand of the Big Dipper points off toward Polaris, the North Star? And did you know this? It's a double star. Polaris is not a single. They've lied to us all these years. Why don't they call it the North Stars? We could handle it. They don't think we can. Footwear update, slippers. You want to know, socks. There's a question, sort of a sweater concept. Pants, tick in the yes checkbox. I had a headache before I came out. I took something. I don't even know what I take. There's three. Medical containers, which I assume are variations on a theme. Aspirin or ibuprofen or acetaminophen or whatever, cinnamon. I don't bother to find out what the difference is between them. I call them all aspirin. I just take one of them. Now, I've never ever experienced relief from any type of aspirin, for anything. But I take them. I get headaches, and if I don't take anything, they go away eventually. I do take something, headache goes away eventually, but it's not that I notice the usefulness of the medication over no medication. It seems to me the same. But there comes a time when it occurs to you that, well, it'd be nice to take a pill. I've a headache, why not? Small little different experience. I haven't taken one in a long time. Let's see. I mean, It couldn't be more boring. Getting the little cap off. That's dreadful. Some people have road rage, I have cap rage. Like, think about the people that designed it. These diabolical minds at work. Creating these caps that interlock with these gizzardy tops. The guiding principle of all design should be easy to open, unless it's a safe or a vault. Then, fine. Everything else, easy to open. Even a safe and a vault, those should be fairly easy too. There shouldn't be any trickery around it. You know the numbers or whatever. You have to build in the human component, which is that we aren't very good at things. We are, of course, superlative. We're excellent at things. But then, when you comes right down to it, not really. So you need a little wiggle room in the safe. It can't be exactly 36, 22, 14. Maybe you've got 37 or 35. That's good enough. That distance right there is the human distance. And that distance right there is not in place with my medicine caps. I don't know the terminology here. I'm so angry. The things I get angry at, I forget what they are. I evacuate their existence and begin with the name. That thing I hate becomes nothing. The cap gives me trouble, and the next moment, I don't even remember what it was. It's a thing. That thing on top of the... See, I don't know. I don't even know what these things are. I don't even know what I took or where it came from or how I got to it. That little moment of contretemps, that little moment of loathing, thinking about those diabolical men with their little magnifying glasses making those things, whatever they are, more difficult to open. All gone. I bring amnesia to the rage. Oh, good Lord, who's here? It's a house. I have no idea who lives in this house. This house that's been unoccupied for years, so far as I know. It's just the dark, nothing house. It's as though I had something to do with its naming. Just forgotten in the woods, and yet now the lights are on. I'm surprised because if you told me there were lights on in this house, I would find it terribly upsetting, frightening. But now just looking at it, it's nothing much. House with lights. Lights with house. So if you're listening to this, and you're listening on iTunes, or you care about iTunes, or you listen to Atoms, Motion, the Void on iTunes, I wanted to let you know that a lot of the early episodes, and maybe a scattered here and there episode, fell out of orbit. In fact, the whole podcast fell out of the iTunes orbit for several months. It's back up now. But those episodes that were disgraced somehow, I thought I'd try to get them back up, but I don't know exactly the best way to do it, so I'm just going to be re-uploading all the episodes in sequence, 1 through 48, and then getting rid of the old ones. I don't know if that's wise. There seemed to be a problem with the old ones. I'm sure. Something Pol Pot's trying to tell me about, which I could not understand. All the technical things Paul tries to tell me about, I cannot follow. I simply cannot, Paul. I know about the Iridium satellites. That's the edge of my understanding of the universe. So, simply let you know, that's what's happening. Starting with the very first one, AMV-1. I hardly remember it. I had this other thought. I didn't call it anything. I don't have thoughts and then name them. I had a thought. I called it the grand theory of thinking. I had a thought. It was this. I thought it would be interesting to simply sit before the microphone and talk without stopping. Never stop. Just keep talking. The idea would be to throw off that critical faculty, the thing that helps moderate your own thoughts, whether you're going to say something or not, how you're going to say it. All that personality and identity that we throw at ourselves and tune up the things that we say and cancel out the things that we somehow think aren't exactly us, so we find vulnerable or too much this or too much that. But to put that aside simply by talking non-stop about whatever came to mind. And that would be the trick, to keep up with your mind like a transcriber, like a go-between, an intermediary. Put aside that governor. The thought that I had after that, which I also did not name, had to do with what if we could ask ourselves a question: what should I do today? Should I engage in this or that? Should I try to do this? Should I write a song? Should I write a story? There are questions sometimes we have about this or that. Should I take that job? What do I really want to do with my life? It occurred to me that in that bubble of babble, if you ask yourself a question, then you just let yourself ride off wildly over the plains, babbling away, but dwelling on the question at hand, what should I do with my life? That you might come up with a truer answer eventually than you would with that governor in place, poking and prodding, pulling words out, changing this or that. That way we talk to ourselves. There's constant committee meetings and gavels dropped and guns fired and concepts shot down because they don't seem like us or we don't seem like them. But if you let yourself babble wildly, where would that get you? What should I do with my life? Where am I? Babble, 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 babble. Maybe it would be useless for 3 or 4 hours, but I think somewhere in there, something would jump right up, like your own shadow jumping right up off the floor. Here I am. This is the answer. You know. When you hear the truth, when you see a shadow jump up from the floor, you can't deny it. You know it. I haven't done this babbling session. I couldn't think of a good question. So I thought it should have a question. Almost like your own oracle. Your own soothsayer. But put the concept of mysticism aside, at least for this. Mysticism's fine, crystal balls, smoke, all that. This is different. This is more of an athletic endeavor. You're running away from your identity to try to find out who you are as quick as you can. And you don't have to be coherent. You don't have to make any sense at all. You can just sometimes make noise. But you have to keep talking. Trying to. Every once in a while, a phrase. I was certain if I did this that long tracks wouldn't make any sense. Much like these talks that I do here with this, as I say, word by word. Words are like steps. Have you ever noticed? Let's say words are like steps when you're walking in the woods. You can walk down a road without thinking. If you walk in the woods, you have to look down and watch, find the place your foot's going to hit. In fact, you can almost see and feel your foot hitting each step. When you're walking on a trail, you rarely look up because you have to keep yourself on track, finding place after place, like you're crossing a river on stone, stone after stone, seeing where your foot's going to land on the rock. And words are like that too, speaking. We see each word. A very short period of time, but it's a similar experience to walking on the trail. The word comes to us, we see it, and we approve it or we deny it. If we deny it, we pause. If we can't find a place to step, we slow. Slight. Sometimes it's a long period. If we come to a very mucky area and we can't see a safe way across, those same mucky areas appear in the brain, in the thinking. It's a puddle on the trail, it's a muddle in the mind. But we see ourselves do things before we do them. And that, in effect, is how we do them. But the babble concept, the babbling away, that's just racing off into the woods. Fast as you can. But it's a fictitious wood, so there's no real danger. If anyone does this, let me know. Let me know if my theory of the babbling epiphany has any merit. Or if it has no merit, then let me know that so I can stop pushing it at the conferences. I go to these conferences and I push the babbling epiphany, and so far no one's done it, so I don't know if it works. I myself can't do it because I can't think of a very interesting question, because everything for me is done. It's all done. What should I do with my life? Basically breathe. Make some porridge. Imagine I'm on the space station in a t-shirt, boxer shorts. Now if I was, I would look down and I would wave to you all.